and good afternoon. Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast. It is hot stove season, and it is Tuesday afternoon, the 10th of November. Adam Azer here. Hello, Scott White.
Adam, hot stove.
Hot stuff. Hello, Al Melchior.
Hot.
Yes.
Hot, hot, hot.
Al?
Yes.
Scott? Guys, yeah. I want to address you as a team here. I have a confession to make.
Uh-oh.
I've been living a lie.
Oh, really?
Yeah, for years.
For years and years.
And it wasn't until about 30 minutes ago when I did a little Google search that I'll just say, I did not know why they called it the hot stove season. I had no freaking idea.
Well, now I'm wondering if my understanding is incorrect.
Well, let's hear what you have to say about it, Al.
Well, because, you know, winter in most places, it's cold.
Right.
And so it's a way to, you know, keep the fires of baseball fandom going.
Yeah, what I saw in the Google search was like it conjures up the image of a bunch of baseball fans sitting around their hot stove during the winter talking about baseball. And maybe it's because I didn't grow up with winter. I never knew
I think
that.
That's why.
Well, that's pretty stupid, okay? Like, who the hell does that?
I never even thought about where it might come from. I just, it's called the hot stove. All right. And just went with it. So you're a step ahead of me as far as that goes.
Are you asking the right question, Scott White?
Apparently not.
Well, I'm glad we settled that. Now everybody knows. Today on the show, Scott now tweeted out a couple of players who were close in their rankings and did a basically an informal Twitter poll, and we'll see what the results are.
Oh, it's a formal Twitter poll.
It's binding.
It's formal. Have you seen the new poll feature on Twitter? You can actually make a poll.
No, I didn't see that.
And people vote on it, and you get results.
Can you heart it?
Can you do what?
Can you heart it?
Yes, you can heart a poll.
Oh, yeah, you can.
Oh, cool.
But you can only
have
two items in your poll. It's a little restrictive in that sense, I think.
We're also going to preview free agency, talk about possible landing spots, where we want to see guys go. Could Jeff Samardzija be better if he goes to a pitcher's park? There are some rumblings about some of the elite closers in baseball where they might end up. But first, this was not my idea. If you're tired of the debate, you blame Al Melchior for this one. Al wants to talk Harper versus Trout. Listen.
Come on, Al.
Once and for all, this is the debate ender.
Yeah, right. So here's the thing. I know that in his heart and in Scott's heart, I'm telling you all, right, just honestly, like there's no question by the time spring training rolls around, they're going to have Trout over Harper because like they're going to switch. I'm going to convince them. But for now, they're going to be stubborn, and Al is going to tell us why. He's still, all week long, he was building up to being like, you know what, Adam, I'm going to go with Trout, but he's still going with Harper over Trout. So please, Al, take it away.
All right. Well, yeah, because the last time, you know, we had a listener who made some really good points, and you know, you'd made some good points in your previous arguments. I was starting to come around, starting to question. So I wanted to look and say, okay, well, why is it, you know, that I should stick with Harper? Because my kind of informal, you know, logic was that Harper he's gone past Trout. That with last season, it was a breakout that exceeded, you know, where Trout, you know, Trout's ceiling is. And I think it's hard to tell. I think looking at the two of them, and like you said, you know, if you take August out, and you have to take August out because it's such an outlier and because it really does seem like it was injury related.
For Trout.
Right.
Not for Harper. Especially if you take that out. I mean, they're very, very similar. But the thing is that I just can't get past is I don't think Mike Trout does anything better than Bryce Harper does. And Bryce Harper does at least one thing better than Trout does, which is he walks more. I also think he strikes out less, but you could say, well, you know, the track record there is sort of mixed. But I think Trout is trending the wrong way in terms of strikeouts. Harper's trending the right way. But for sure, we know that Harper's going to walk more, so he's going to have the higher on base. And if you add to that I'm pretty certain, even though we don't know at this early point in the offseason for sure, I'm pretty certain the Nationals are going to give Harper more run-producing opportunities than the Angels will give Trout. So between those two things and the fact that I don't think Trout does a single thing better than Harper does.
Well, you're wrong about
stick
that.
With Harper.
Well, just to play devil's advocate here, Trout walked 92 times last year. If Harper walks 91 this time, times this year, do you think that's going to be some major upset?
I think that would the look. I think that'd be a no. It wouldn't be a major upset.
Yeah,
I'd be a little surprised.
Thank you, Scott White.
No, I was just playing devil's advocate. Look, it's you have to be nitpicky here because they're both awesome. I think, you know, if I could just put it the most honest and I think beneficial way to everybody is you want to get the third pick in the draft.
Yeah.
And I say third pick because we keep leaving Paul Goldschmidt out of this discussion when I'm not so sure he's not the best of the three. I'd be fine with any of them.
Yeah.
I'd rather not have to make the choice.
No, I totally. I was really just comparing outfielders. You're spot on there, but Trout steals bases better than Harper does. Even if Trout's not a base stealer, he's still going to likely steal more bases, and he has that skill. Like, it wouldn't shock you if Mike Trout stole 30 bases. It would shock you if Bryce Harper
did,
right?
It would shock me, and it's funny because if I think they're pretty equal. I would actually give the edge to Harper because Trout last season was really inefficient as a base stealer. And that's been a consistent trend for him, a downhill trend. I think there's actually
fine.
A little bit of hope.
Fine, Al. You know what? You talk to me in April. I can write your rankings for you right now if you want. But if you want to keep the charade up, then it's good for the listeners. I appreciate it.
Well, one last thing, because I know somebody's probably going to say, well, but what about the health aspect of this? And at this point, I don't think Harper is really more likely to get hurt than Trout. Trout got hurt last year. He played through it. Harper played a full season. So, I think that's pretty equal at this point.
Can I add one more thing?
Of course.
Because we never get tired of this discussion. No. The emailer and you, I think, Adam, have both made the safety argument for Trout. You know, he's done it year after year. So he has zero chance of letting you down. Well, Harper maybe has some between the injuries and just the lack of track record. But I actually feel like Harper's the safer pick of the two, and it's because of what Al was talking about with the downward trend. It's not just the stolen bases, it's the strikeouts, too. You know, 2 years ago was actually Trout's worst strikeout season, but just comparing the last 2 years to his first 2 years, he strikes out more. And just that both of those decline in skill at such a young age kind of worry me a little. That's another reason I think to give Harper a slight edge. Again, worry's relative because I still think Trout could very well be the best player next year, but I think there's some risk there.
Okay. All right. Email us at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com if you want to weigh in. Of course, we're taking a lot of keeper questions this time of year. We have an awesome question about auctions. I was going to read it today, but I'll save it for next week. Let's get to the news and notes because there is a lot going on. Michael Brantley expected to miss 5 to 6 months after having right shoulder surgery. Albert Pujols is out 4 to 5 months after foot surgery. So let's start with Brantley here. He's got a longer timetable. He's a more valuable fantasy player. Where is Michael Brantley in your rankings right now, and when would you consider drafting him?
I dropped him, I don't remember the exact spot I had him before, but it was like 8th or 9th. I dropped him to 15th in points and 16th in Roto. So
I did a little more than that, 18th and 19th for Brantley. Anticipating he'll miss April, that's kind of my hunch. And I think maybe there's also some lingering concern about how a shoulder surgery might impact his productivity when he first comes back. Now, he had a back issue that impacted his productivity in the first half this year and still ended up with awesome numbers. So I'm not as worried about that as some people might be, but I think there's enough good outfielders. Like, I have him just behind Charlie Blackmon and Lorenzo Cain. That's, you know, you draft Blackmon or Cain or Cespedes or Cargo, I feel like more likely than not, you're going to have a stud outfielder all season. So there's no reason to forfeit that month from Brantley if you don't have to.
And he's still very young and still in his prime. Whereas, am I overreacting here? I just feel like I want to be done with. I have no interest in Pujols. I was wrong about Pujols, you know, in 2015 because I had no interest in him then. He basically had one really good month at the beginning of 2014, and then he was garbage the rest of the way. And I was expecting that to somewhat continue into this past year. But he hit 40 home runs. He hit most of them in like 20-something games.
Yeah.
But I think 21 games, he hit 20 home runs. And his other 110 games, he hit 20 home runs with an OPS under 700. And now a foot surgery. He's had foot problems. I can't see myself taking Albert Pujols.
No, I can't either, other than just, you know, is a value play in the mid to late rounds.
He's still in my top 15 first baseman, though. I couldn't move him behind Mark Teixeira, anticipating also that he'll probably miss the first month. Pujols, that is, like Brantley. But I still couldn't lower. And part of me wonders, since this plantar fasciitis is something he's battled for years, if for as much contact as he makes and as much home run power as he still has, if he might actually be better when he gets back from this. Not like first round good, but capable of hitting 280 again.
Yeah. By the way, I was way off on my stat. It was 47 games where he hit 20 home runs and 20 home runs in the other 110 games. So I said like 20 games. It was 47 games. But he had like a great 2 month stretch, and that was pretty much it. He was pretty lousy other than that. So wait, did you say where exactly you guys had Pujols ranked?
I said top 15. Right now on the site we only go through top 12, so I don't have
okay.
It open.
Yeah, no, I haven't made the adjustments to the guys that are below that cutoff. And I didn't have them in the top 12 to start off with, so I'm gonna guess probably around 20.
All right, well, there are more news items that we should cover. Tampa Bay, they love Seattle middle infielders. First it was Nick Franklin, now they're getting Brad Miller, along with Danny Farquhar and Logan Morrison in a 6-player trade. They are sending Nate Karns, left-handed reliever CJ Riefenhauser, and Boog Powell, minor league outfielder Boog Powell.
Man, he's been around a long time, huh?
Yeah, what a veteran. Sly pickup here. What do you guys think of this trade? What's the biggest fantasy impact in this deal?
I actually think it might be Boog Powell.
Really?
He's not going to be the most valuable, obviously, these guys, and there's no guarantee he'll start or, you know, play in Seattle this year. But the Mariners, they need outfielders now, and Powell is at least going to get a shot at it. And if he does, crack the starting outfield there, he profiles as sort of a Billy Burns type. Actually, what I wrote on Twitter is he could give you a Nick Markakis line with some steals, because I was sort of reluctant to make the Burns comparison because Burns had a lot more steals as a minor leaguer. I think that's kind of the X factor with Powell.
Powell's, you know, was caught nearly as many times as he was successful last year, 18 out of 32. So yeah. I don't know that I love his base stealing ability.
Yeah, so I think that the on-base part of his game is something that might translate a lot better.
Yeah.
So obviously not huge impact there, but maybe a guy that you look at in points leagues, especially deeper ones. But at least that would be, you know, he's on the radar now, Powell, whereas I don't think there's really any big change for Karns. I don't think...
But Brad Miller, I do like this for him, because it seemed like the Mariners had given up on him as a shortstop. I mean, Ketel Marte coming up pretty much assured that. He may have gotten close to regular bats as kind of this Ben Zobrist rover type player, but sounds like for the Rays, he's going to be their shortstop. So I think the consistency of the bats and maybe the position, maybe just a change of scenery, will help him tap into some of the potential I thought he had when he first came up, to be a shortstop who hits 15, 20 homers with a good on-base percentage. But we'll see.
Well, you know,
one thing with all these players is they're going from a pitcher's park to a pitcher's park.
Right.
So it's not like there's going to be any transformation as far as that goes.
How about Karns, though? He was pretty impressive in spots last year. You know, they pretty much protected him. 6 innings, didn't really want him to go deep into games, but he pitched well. Is Karns a guy that should be on our radar?
I think he's kind of a low-end sleeper, a guy who probably won't get drafted in mixed leagues, but could end up being relevant pretty early on. I like him. I don't think the trade really changes anything for him. I guess there's zero chance he doesn't have a rotation spot out of the gate. But I thought he was pretty much assured that with the Rays anyway. So I think he's not a super high upside pitcher, but enough upside that he'll be mixed league relevant at times this year.
You know, when you talk about, Scott, the change of organization for Carnes, that does make me think of something I didn't think much about at the time of the trade, which is that, yeah, I think in either case, he's starting the year in the rotation. But with Tampa, with Alex Cobb coming back at some time, Blake Snell probably getting called up.
Yeah.
I think Carnes could have been vulnerable.
That's true.
So this is probably a little bit of a bonus for him.
So Minnesota, being a little aggressive here, they won the bidding for Korean hitter Byung-ho Park. They bid almost $13 million on him. He played in the same league as Jung-ho Kang. He played on the same team as Jung-ho Kang. Were they teammates, or they just like were on the same team at different times?
You know? I thought teammates. I'm not 100% sure of that.
Why not? Yeah. Al, you're our Korean baseball correspondent. All right, whatever.
Well,
Anyway,
I can look it up for you right now if you
no,
want.
No, it's well. I don't. Yeah, okay, fine. Yeah, look it up. Actually,
don't
he hit 53 home
don't,
runs.
Don't be throwing Al under
see
the bus
was,
here.
See if
it's
he
not
was
all on him.
Played for Nexon because that's Park's team.
You know, I think one thing to note here is the Twins haven't actually signed him yet. They just bought the right to negotiate with him.
Right, right.
So keep that in mind.
But he's 29 years old and he's a 50 homer guy and. The ballparks are small there, but still, he's obviously got some pop, and Gong was pretty good last year, so is he a mixed league guy if the Twins sign?
It's kind of unfair to just compare the two, but Gong's really the only case study we have for this. I think the fact he transitioned as well as he did makes me fairly optimistic about Park. Now, one thing I've noticed about Park is he strikes out a lot, and that's against... You know, that's in Korean baseball, not in Major League Baseball, which I would think would be tougher to face.
Yeah, I would say so. That's probably accurate.
Yeah. And then a lot of Park's power came from home runs, while Gong had some extra base power otherwise going on there. And you know, I just don't know if he's this extreme fly ball hitter that wouldn't hit for nearly as high of an average in the majors either, but he walks a lot, and I think he has enough power to maybe hit 15 to 20 home runs. I think upside for him could be in the Eric Hosmer, Freddie Freeman range, but that's absolute best case scenario. I would have him behind like Pujols, for instance, in my rankings.
Who is Kenta Maeda?
Japanese pitcher.
And is he exciting for fantasy owners if he comes over to the States?
I mean, to a degree, I think he'll... It's not going to be like a Yu Darvish, Masahiro Tanaka situation. It would be more like, well, maybe he could be kind of what... like Hisashi Iwakuma or Hiroki Kuroda was. That's what I would hope for from him, depending where he lands.
Jose Reyes was arrested on domestic violence charges. Rob Manfred does have the power to... discipline him with no minimum or maximum amount of games suspended. So we'll just have to keep an eye on that. And finally, Al, the Dodgers want Yasiel Puig to lose weight. Do you think Yasiel Puig could be the steal of the draft this year? Maybe people are down on him and he finally puts it all together.
He could be, but I mean, that's, you know, we've seen just such a range of, productivity from Puig. So that upside is certainly still there. If he loses weight, you know, maybe that's going to help, but I think he's as much of a wild card with weight loss as in any other situation. He's just going to be a risky guy to draft. But to me, it would be almost impossible for him not to have some bounce back next season.
So where would you draft Yasiel Puig? Give me a round.
I know you want to move on to the next thing, but Alex Reyes and that 50-game suspension for marijuana I think is sort of a big deal. Because I think he was going to be one of the more anticipated pitching prospects this year, and that puts a pretty nice dent into his value.
Well, it's only 50 games, though, right?
Well,
it'll be 40 after, because it actually counts Arizona Fall League games for some reason.
I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, so, I mean, it'll it'll probably keep him from having any chance of breaking into the majors this year. It was already kind of a long shot, I think, based on his stage of his development. But, see, exciting prospect, and obviously you hate to see him stalled like this.
Give me a round where you're drafting Yasiel Puig in a 12-team league.
Round. Well, he's outside my top 20 outfielders, so that would probably put him in maybe the round 8 range. That sounds pretty good to me.
I was thinking 7 or 8, yeah.
Yeah.
And, we have a rank similarly.
Interesting. Okay. So let's get to the Twitter polls. Rankings, pairings, this guy or this guy. Let's see what the Twitterverse had to say. So, Scott, you had Pujols versus Teixeira. What were the results, sir?
64% said Pujols to 36% Teixeira, and that was with the assumption Pujols misses a month. I had a premise for this. So that kind of makes me feel better about dropping Pujols where I did, still inside the top 15, because, I mean, Teixeira, I don't love the idea of drafting him next year either, but after that, you get into, like, Lucas Duda and Carlos Santana, who I know we're used to being a higher-end name, but that was when he was third-base eligible or catcher eligible. It's first base only, coming off a year when he hit, like, 220.
Yeah.
He's talking about a late rounder. And neither of those guys, I think, even comes close to the potential of what Teixeira did last year. So, both risky players, but still more promising than most of what you'll find at a position that seems to drop off pretty quickly.
Corey Seager versus Xander Bogaerts. What were the results?
That was 59% Corey Seager, 41% Xander Bogaerts.
Whoa, really?
Yeah.
What a lack of respect for Xander Bogaerts.
Well, I don't know. I have Seager ranked ahead myself. Not that I don't like Bogaerts, but I feel like with Bogaerts' power at this point would be a surprise to me. I'm not saying he'll never develop it, but there's no reason for me to expect it to happen this year when Seager, based on how he performed when the little bit of time he was up this year, I think he's just going to hit the ground running, kind of like Carlos Correa did. So, particularly at a position where it's not like if you miss, you're really going to be in worse shape than everybody else. I'd rather gamble on the upside of Seager.
Al, how about you? Who would you rather have, Corey Seager or Xander Bogaerts?
I'm sorry.
Were you asking Al?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I voted these. I voted Bogaerts.
Hey, okay. I'm going to start guessing the Twitter results, okay?
Okay.
Kyle Seager versus Michael Franco. And Al, do you know the results here?
I do.
You do? Okay, so you can't guess. I will say 58% Kyle Seager, 42% Michael Franco.
Not bad.
Very close. It was 52-48 Seager over Franco. A little closer. I think this was the closest one of the four, actually. And it does match my rankings. But it's an interesting point in the third base rankings, because it's after, obviously the Elite Four, Frazier, if you want to call an Elite Five, Carpenter, Rendon, and then you get a group of Kyle Seager this time, remember, Michael Franco, Adrian Beltre, Mike Moustakas. To me, they are all, like, I could see ranking any one of those four ahead of the other three. But they're all very different players. So I think the most alike, actually, are Seager and Moustakas, but they're bookends for me in that group. I go Seager, then Franco, then Beltre, then Moustakas. Obviously, Seager edges out Moustakas because he's done it like 4 years in a row. But Franco has the higher ceiling, definitely. And if you want to roll the dice, as opposed to just playing it safe, it could be a rewarding gamble for you.
Al, your preference?
Seager. And it's very close. I've got them ranked, I think, two spots apart, if I recall correctly.
I think, if I recall correctly, just to put the upside in perspective, Franco averaged more head-to-head points per game. Yep, I pulled it up here. Than Chris Bryant. On a per-game basis, he was better than Chris Bryant for the time he played for the Phillies this year.
And, you know, both in the case of Franco and Corey Seager, I'm probably going pretty conservative on both, just, you know, because, I mean, both look great right out of the gate, but I'm just concerned about what might happen over a full season. And as far, you know, Scott's comparison of Seager and Moustakas, early reveal here, Moustakas is going to be on my bust list.
Yeah.
This year. I'm not really buying into the second half power surge. I think he's actually well below, Kyle Seager. And, so that's kind of interesting, but I generally agree, you know, that there's a lot of bunchiness at third base once you get past the first tier.
This next one is very difficult. I have no idea who it's going to be. It's Colton Wong versus Joe Panik.
You'll probably be surprised to learn then that it was the most lopsided.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. Then I'm just going to say that the public is really mad at Colton Wong and really happy with what they saw from Joe Panik. And I'm going to say it was 64-36, Joe Panik wins.
I'm going to say Adam is really wrong.
Oh, wow. I underestimated the public. Okay, what's the, what are the results?
Wong's the winner.
I was a Panik voter. I made the Panik move.
Oh, that was a Panik move.
So what were the percentages?
I think it is a Panik move, actually, to be so down on Wong in general. Obviously had a bumpy finish his second season in the majors.
I missed the percentages, Scott. What were the percentages?
74-26.
Whoa, really?
Yeah. Yeah. 221 wow. votes.
Okay.
I mean, the strikeout rate was still low. We know he's a 20 steal guy. That's probably the safest thing we can expect from him. And we've seen enough power from him for me to think he has 20 homer power too. That's, you know, obviously if you fall short of that, you're still at 15 homer, 20 steal second baseman, with enough contact that I think he can at least approach Panik in terms of batting average. I think it's closer if you're talking points leagues only. I think you can make a much stronger case for Panik instead, but this was kind of a poll I set up in part because I felt like maybe I was going too much against the grain, like you were saying, Adam, by sticking with Wong over Panik coming off the years they just had. But apparently the majority agrees that the upside for Wong is just too great to pass up.
Can I tell you guys, I want to get in on the Twitter poll madness, and I want to do it while we're on the air. So I think I'm going to create a poll right now, and I think it's going to be, do you think I was cool in high school? And let's see
what does that have to do with this topic?
What'd you say?
What does that have to do with this topic?
It has nothing to do with this topic, but I just want to see if people think I was cool.
The Reds.
All right, Al, let's go to your
going to be anything less than unanimous. I think we keep talking over each other, Adam.
Yeah, sorry about that. Hosmer versus Pujols. Al, I'm going to guess, I'm going to guess this was after the injury, right?
My poll?
Yeah.
That was four. So that's really sort of been rendered moot now.
All right. So we skip it?
No, let's not.
Okay. Then I will say Pujols won 75-25.
See, that's what I think is interesting about this because Hosmer got 64% of the vote.
What?
And before the injury. Yeah. Wow.
So this is interesting to me because I had Hosmer and Teixeira right next to each other in my rankings before the injury to Pujols. And my poll was assuming, okay, Pujols is going to miss significant time, and he still won in a big way over Teixeira. So where the heck are people expecting to draft Mark Teixeira? That's what I want to know. Are you taking Lucas Duda over him? No, right?
No, I'm not. No way.
What else at first base is exciting to you? CJ Krohn? You into that?
To me, Duda and Tex are actually not that far apart. I mean, to me, there's a big gap once you get down to CJ Krohn. Although, if Pujols is out a long time, maybe Krohn's value improves. But
I just feel like Teixeira, and maybe I'm misremembering. No, Teixeira's much better plate discipline guy. Maybe in Roto there isn't that much difference. But head-to-head, I feel like there is.
Al, we're moving to your next poll. Next poll?
Next poll.
Okay. Lorenzo Cain versus Yoenis Cespedes. I think this is probably pretty close. I'll say Cespedes 53-47.
Well, you're pretty close there, but Kane did win, but it was close. Kane 55%. And basically my reason for putting this out there is because I suspected that Cespedes was maybe still going to live off some of the late season hype. And, even though he had a pretty miserable World Series and, apparently, that did catch up with him.
Everybody's down on Cespedes now.
But that's a big shift, and I wasn't sure that happened.
I wonder how much of this is just, the Royals beat the Mets, so Mets stink, Royals are great.
Well, I don't know about that. I think this is appropriate. I've got them ranked very close to each other, which is why they're coupled in this poll.
Yeah.
And I do have Kane a little bit ahead, so I basically agree with the result. I just perceived I was out of sync and that people were still going to be just crazy about Cespedes and thinking he was a top 10 outfielder.
What I worry about with Kane is that his value, which was great this year, but it's dependent on him being good at many different things. And you take one of those away, he's becomes pretty average. And I'm still not convinced of the power. I think if we assess Cespedes just on what he did with Detroit and throw that crazy finish with the Mets out the window, he's basically Adam Jones. Now, I don't know that you can rank him as high as Adam Jones because he's had injury issues and consistency issues, but I think that's the fairest assessment of his value, taking everything into context, and he shouldn't be far behind Jones.
Yeah, and I think the three of them, Jones, Kane, Cespedes,
yeah,
all going to be, for me, 15-ish.
Yeah.
Mid-teens.
Yeah, same for me.
Yeah.
Next poll. Here we go.
Derek Norris, versus Blake Swihart.
Yeah, this one I feel like I have a good handle on this one. Swihart just blew Derek Norris away. 68-32.
Wow. 66-34.
Hey, okay,
excellent.
I'm back in the game.
There. So you've got a better finger on the pulse, or better read of the pulse than I do, because the reason I coupled these two, I'm very big on Swihart going into this year. I think he's gonna be a top 12 catcher, maybe even top eight, and especially in Roto. But my perception was that he'd be viewed more as kind of a mid-range number two catcher. I thought this would be pretty close. So clearly I'm not really that out of sync with what most people think is I thought.
Of all the polls, mine and yours, this is the one where I'm most adamant about the result. The others are so close in my mind, but Norris just has no redeeming quality anymore. I'm not even as bullish on Swihart as Al is, but I'd rather take the chance on that upside than just the meh production of Norris.
Yeah, he's such a low upside, nothing player. But what about my poll, the high school thing? You don't care about the results of that?
No, I care.
I know
much
what the results are.
Well, I'm getting killed right now, but one guy said, not with that geeky voice you have. You are not and never were cool, loser.
Dang.
Right?
You don't have to point out why he wasn't cool.
That was kind of mean. All right, Al, we ready for your next poll?
All right. Yeah, this is kind of a two-parter, these last two. Lance McCullers versus Marcus Stroman. What do you think?
Definitely Stroman. And I will say it was Stroman. Oh man, 58-42.
Man, you are a McCullers apologist compared to the average voter. 79-21 for Stroman.
Oh,
and that's pretty much what I expected. And the reason why I ran this one out there is because I had some Twitter discussion a few days ago about my rankings, and I had sort of lumped these two with Luis Severino and Steven Matz. I really think they're pretty similar. Now, I would probably put McCullers at the bottom, but I'm sort of struggling whether to put him third or fourth with him and Stroman. I actually see Matz and Severino as being a little better going into next year, because I'm not confident about the K rate from Stroman. And I'm actually very confident about that for McCullers. But the perception is that Stroman is much better, I think.
Well, I have them pretty close. I have Stroman 31, McCullers 36. I'm curious, though, because these are McCullers, Severino, and Matz are all, they've never pitched a full season. They're still relatively unproven. Where do you have somebody like Jordan Zimmermann relative to Stroman? Because you know, Stroman's not as proven as Zimmerman, but he's done enough and basically came back the same pitcher he was before the injury. I think he's done enough that we know who he is, and I don't think it's too unlike Jordan Zimmerman.
That's a great point, and I have Jordan Zimmerman ahead of the whole slew of these second-year guys. So, I mean, I know Stroman technically will be third year. Yeah, maybe that just means I need to push Jordan Zimmerman down my rankings, because that doesn't sit right with me to have Stroman.
You know, I really want to hear an explanation for why Jordan Zimmerman was so meh last year. Like, just tell me mechanics, or there was an injury, or just something, please. Because not only did he disappoint, I feel like he and the rest of the Nationals staff and the Mets probably, no, because the Mets were a horrible offense for half the year. The Nationals may have, this is probably something we could look up. They probably had the easiest schedule, their pitchers in baseball. He should have had an amazing year, and he just wasn't even close. So can we get an explanation, please, for Jordan Zimmerman?
I just don't think he's, I think he's kind of a meh pitcher from a fantasy's perspective, to be perfectly honest, for what I was saying. The lack of a decent strikeout. Well, I guess it's decent. The lack of a good strikeout rate. And there's so many pitchers these days who can get a strikeout per inning that, even going 200 innings like Zimmerman did, you're just not going to be able to crack that ace level if you're not getting those strikeouts. So,
forget the ace level. Just, like, get a good ERA and win some games and stop sucking, man. God, he was just... Oh, I hated him. All right. I spent enough time...
Good pitchers just have that year.
I spent enough time during the season ranting about Jordan Zimmerman. Did we get to the Mats versus Stroman thing?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's preview free agency a little bit. Hot stove! The three of us are sitting around a hot stove right now in this... cold day. Well, I'm kind of cold up here in New York, and we're talking about baseball, so hooray for the hot stove. John Heyman's been kind of all over free agency, telling us where guys could end up. But are there any free agents or players on the trade market? Like, there have been rumors about Andrew Miller and Mark Melanson and Aroldis Chapman. Players that need a change of scenery or would be harmed by a change of scenery? Like, who has the most at stake right now?
I'll say of the group that you mentioned, and nobody there really stands out. But if you throw in the free agents, I think Chris Davis and Daniel Murphy stand out for me. Daniel Murphy, because the Rockies are rumored to be one of his landing spots. And I don't see how that could be anything but great for him.
Mm-hmm.
Or most hitters.
Yeah.
And Chris Davis, I do worry about because I think he's really benefited a lot from great hitters parks in his career. I know last year he had, good power numbers on the road, but, amazing ones in Baltimore. And with the Mariners and the Cardinals being on the list of possible landing spots for him, I don't think that's good for his value.
Ooh, I don't know. I mean, this guy... 2013, 28 home runs at home, 25 on the road. 2014, 13 at home and 13 on the road. And then last year, 29 at home and 18 on the road. But doesn't he just kind of strike you as like a Nelson Cruz type where he could hit him out of any park? When he hits home runs, he destroys them.
Yeah, that's how he strikes me. And Nelson Cruz is a good comparison because he made that exact same move, Baltimore to Seattle last year, and no let up, actually got better. But at the same time, it's a move that you would have to hold against Chris Davis in some small way, just because you don't know how it's going to affect a player until you're seeing it affect them.
How about Samardzija, guys? Is he someone that could? He's interesting. I hated Samardzija going into the year. I was
get him out of there.
Drafting him. He's had 1 year as a starter and 4 years as a starter with an ERA under 3.8. But now maybe his value could be so beaten down that you might get good value for him on draft day. And if he just gets out of U.S. Cellular, where he gave up a lot of home runs, but like, could he bounce back with a change of scenery, Jeff Samardzija?
I think any change of scenery will be good for him. And I know this is just a theory, but we're talking about a late round pick for Samardzija. So I think you can draft based on loose theories when in the late rounds. He threw a cut fastball more than ever before. It's White Sox pitching coach's Don Cooper's favorite pitch. And he got pummeled. The 1 year he did that with the one pitching coach that you would expect him to encourage, you would expect to encourage him to do that. So I think as long as he lands somewhere with a decent pitching coach that you can trust to straighten him out, I think I heard the Cubs as a possibility, him going back there, and Chris Bosio is a great pitching coach. I think reuniting with him would serve Samardzija well. But even better someplace like do you have any of the other possible destinations there? It would be even better if he went somewhere that was like a true pitcher's park. But bottom line is, I think he's going to be a late round pick I'm making pretty often, as long as he doesn't stay with the White Sox.
I don't have any of the destinations, but would you rather have would you rather take a flyer on Samardzija or Jaime Garcia?
I would rather take a flyer. Well, I don't think Jaime Garcia is going to be a flyer. I think he's going to be drafted everywhere. So, but I would have to say Garcia.
I know he's going to get drafted because he pitched really well last year, but his track record suggests.
Well, okay. Let me put it a different way.
Okay.
Because I think I see what you're getting at.
Yeah.
If you said I had to take both, I would take Jaime Garcia first, but I will probably have Samardzija on a lot more of my teams than Garcia.
Right. Makes sense.
By the way, I'm looking at the Heyman piece here, and he says that Samardzija's got some connections to the Yankees and Tigers. So Yankee Stadium would not solve the park factor problem. Tiger Stadium, Comerica Park, would to a greater degree. And also, I went to Fangraphs to see what the pitch value was for Samardzija last year on his cutter. And it actually was the best of all his pitches. That doesn't necessarily mean that dropping it would be bad for him, because maybe it's how it set up the other pitches that destroyed the value of the fastball and slider and so forth. But
that pitch value thing hasn't really won me over, because it just seems so random from year to year.
Yeah, you don't have the complete context of how the pitches are being used in the arsenal. But
right,
it's it can be useful certainly to explain changes in a pitcher's performance, especially positively when somebody adds something to Snow, and they're getting a lot of value on that pitch.
Alex Gordon, do you guys think Alex Gordon could be a different player in a different park?
I don't expect it. I suppose maybe he could benefit from a better power park, given that he's just had sort of middling power numbers at Kauffman, but I don't think it'll be a big impact.
Do you guys think I was cool?
I don't know what his road power splits are, so that's something I'm going to have to look up right now.
Yeah. Do you guys think I was cool in high school, by the way?
Yes.
No.
I was, Scott.
You were.
I was very cool. I was nominated for Homecoming King and Prom King.
Were any of us cool?
I was very cool, I'm telling you.
Apparently you were cool.
I was, yeah.
Okay. You can be. That's fine.
I used to be cool. I was.
What happened?
I think alcohol happened, and I don't drink, so it really hurt my social life. Not so much in high school, because I had
that was a drop in the cool factor from high school to college. I'm right there with you, buddy.
Yeah. College, all I did was drive people, which they liked that. Oh, Azer will drive us, but I wasn't really that cool. I was just kind of there. Anything else in free agency, guys? By the way, I'm getting destroyed. 76% no out of 193 votes.
Better luck with the next poll.
It's good to know you're still relishing your high school days.
My middle school days were even better, but
really?
I'll stick with high school. You want to read some emails or more on free agency?
Well, I could see that you're really dying to know what Alex Gordon's power splits were on the road.
Actually, I'm quite interested, so please tell us.
Okay, well, they're better. They're not great. So I think it kind of backs up my suspicions. But I'm looking at the career numbers here, And I'm also stalling because I lost my place on the page. So yeah, his ISO on the road. Oh, geez. I must have been looking at the wrong thing. He had worse power splits on the road. So never mind.
Yep. Forget him. Unless he goes to Colorado.
Yeah. Game changer for everybody.
Our email address is fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. This is from Jeremy in Ashton, Maryland. Al, did you ever live there?
In Maryland, yes. Ashton, no.
Do you ever live within 10 miles of it?
I'm really embarrassed to admit that I don't know where in Maryland Ashton is.
Okay. All right. He says, hey, Carl, Bruce, and Diana. I think this is superhero comic book stuff here. But I was too cool in high school to know that. So I have six potential keepers for five spots in my 16-team head-to-head categories league. No keeper restrictions. I'm looking to trade two of them to upgrade my pitcher. What is the best pitcher I can expect for Schwarber and Carrasco?
Ooh. Schwarber and Carrasco. You should be able to ask for just about any pitcher you want.
Yeah, I would agree.
Maybe you won't get Kershaw, but...
But just about anybody else.
Carrasco is a borderline ace himself, so...
Yeah, I think that could get you Chris Sale. That could get you Corey Kluber.
Scherzer.
I think that's, you know, you could ask. You might.
Arrieta, or just Arrieta.
By the way, I've looked up Ashton. What was the mileage radius you were asking?
10 miles.
Pretty close. Looks like a yes.
Okay, good stuff. Have you lived 10 miles from Brian in Kansas City?
How do you live 10 miles?
No, have you?
Oh, have I? No, I've never lived in Missouri or Kansas.
All right, Brian says, dear George, Frank, and Dick.
All right, so Dick Hauser.
George Brett.
George Brett. Well, then maybe it's, yeah, because you got George Brett, Frank White, I would assume. So Dick would have to be a player, I would think, rather than a manager. Or it could just be, okay, Dick Hauser, sure. Why not?
Yeah, there you go. All right, here's the question. 12-team head-to-head points league with -1 point for hitter strikeouts, 2 points for steals. 3 keepers per year, whatever round the player was drafted in. This year is lost for next year. Each subsequent year a player is kept, the round you lose increases by 2 rounds. So,
I want to, before you read off the names, I want to stress, minus a full point for hitter strikeouts, which is twice as much as our standard format, so that's going to make the answer sound kind of weird.
Okay. Joey Votto in the 5th round. He needs 3 here. Joey Votto in the 5th. Manny Machado in the 7th. AJ Pollock in the 12th. Mike Trout in the 1st. Garrett Cole in the 4th. Clayton Kershaw in the 1st. And you can keep 2 first rounders. In that case, you lose your first and second round pick. So I'll read it again. Votto in the 5th. Machado in the 7th. Pollock in the 12th, Trout in the 1st, Cole in the 4th round, and Kershaw in the 1st round.
Votto, Machado, Pollock are the easy 3. And then I think I'd go Trout in the 1st, even though he strikes out a lot. I mean, still Mike Trout.
I have good news for you, Scott.
Yeah.
You're only allowed to keep 3.
Oh, all right. Then throw Trout back.
Scott just changed the rules to make this easier for all of us.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking Machado and Pollock are pretty easy. And then it's choosing between Trout and Kershaw. But I get, yeah. Actually, now I'm thinking about it, it's really that not that hard. I'd rather have Trout in the 1st round.
Wait, you don't want Votto? Especially.
5th round.
Yeah, this is a good fourth round.
That's good.
It's like a 2nd rounder.
Would be good to know when he picks, because, yeah, it'd be a waste to protect Trout if he's got the 1st pick, and maybe the 2nd. Or maybe even the 3rd, as Scott was arguing earlier.
So what's going to be, so yeah,
if,
Al?
If you got one of the 1st 3 picks, then yeah, I would go Votto. But otherwise, I'd want to secure Trout.
Are you going to skip the email of the day, Adam?
Yeah, I'm going to skip it so we can spend more time on it next show.
Oh, right. I remember that. Sorry. I wasn't paying attention to this podcast.
And here's Al in Norway. Different Al. He says, gentlemen, I love your work. I listen to every episode. I was wondering if you, as baseball enthusiasts, will watch the Premier 12 tournament? If yes, which country wins? I think the Netherlands will win.
I'm not enough of a baseball enthusiast to know much about the Premier tournament.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry.
Well, sorry, it's an international tournament, and I'm just going to say USA, so...
Are they in it?
Yeah, they're in it.
Oh, okay.
Last one is from... Who's this from? Oh, no name. Let's just call him Peter. Because of a few dips in production, I'm in quite the pickle. I can't decide who to pick for my keepers. You can keep three players for whatever value they were drafted at for three seasons. Free agent pickups are $1. It's a five outfielder league, middle infield, corner outfielder. So he needs three. Corey Seager, Miguel Sano, Rougned Odor, Hector Oliveira, and Randall Grichuk are all $1. Jock Peterson is $2. Todd Frazier is $16. Carlos Gonzalez is $15. And Travis d'Arnaud is $5.
Well, first of all, he gave us an interesting salutation.
Dear Terry, Terry, and Terry.
Which I assume to be Pendleton, Cruz, and Francona.
Well, he told us it's Francona, Collins, and Bevington, the last three managing Terrys.
Yeah, not even close, Scott. Way to go.
Who's Terry Bevington?
It was the White Sox manager.
Should I be embarrassed that I asked that question?
Nope, because I had to look it up, too.
Okay.
It was in the 90s, wasn't it?
I don't know. If it was early 90s, then I was too young to know.
I don't think you have to look beyond the $1 players in this keeper scenario because they're borderline studs themselves.
So
Seager, Sano, and Odor.
Yeah.
And you would not considering Hector Oliveira there?
Oh, no.
No.
Right. All right. Hey, good job, guys. Good show. Thank you.
No problem as I look up Terry Bevington.
Now I know that we've been talking over each other a lot. I actually have a solution for that. I will implement it in our next podcast. So I promise we'll get better at that. I have a different setup today than I usually have, and just have to make one subtle change. So always working on making sure the quality is as good as it can be. Scott White, Al Melchior, you have yourselves a great week, and I will podcast with you next week.
All right, Adam.
Yep. See you then.
Get it fixed.
Cool in high school, and we will talk to you probably next Tuesday. Thanks a lot, everybody. See you later.